Hello and welcome to TMCNet.com's third ever podcast. Today is April the 22nd, Friday, and it is 3:25 Eastern Standard Time, and I'm here with Robert Liu, and I'm also here with Al Breidenberg, who work for TMCNet.com. Guys, say hello.
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 Bob just informed me a moment ago that it is Earth Day, and tell us a little bit about Earth Day, Bob. I'm not a big environmentalist person.
Oh, you know, it's our day to, treasure the planet that we all share.
As I understand, Earth Day was started about 35 years ago, and I think here in the technology space, I noticed that I've seen a number of news releases related to Earth Day today, encouraging people to recycle their cell phones and computers.
That's right, and disposable batteries.
Excellent. Excellent. Fantastic. While we buy ever more electronic gadgets, which of course pollute the skies with toxic fumes. But I think I'm going in the wrong direction with this, with the technology versus Earth Day discussion.
Yeah, let's find something that might make people feel a little happy.
Well, you know, it's interesting that a couple of years ago after Jack Welch retired from GE, I had the opportunity to hear him speak at a breakfast, and one of the things that Jack Welch said that horrified the audience was that a Palm 7, which was at the time the state-of-the-art wireless handheld device, takes up as much battery or takes up as much energy as a refrigerator.
Ouch.
And the audience was horrified. We didn't understand what he meant. And then what he explained was that once you take into account all the back-end servers and everything that's required to power a Palm 7 with the routers and the Internet and everything, all the wireless gear, that's what you're doing is using that much electricity. And you don't think about it, but the more devices we pick up and use, including those iPods, and I bet there's a lot of environmentalists that are iPod listeners, by the time you use iTunes, you are probably burning a lot of electricity, but the flip side is you're not using as much plastic for CDs, so I leave it up to you to make that decision. But I'm digressing. Let's move on to the topic of the week. The first and probably most important topic is what happened with Quest and MCI. Who wants to take that one?
Well, I might just mention briefly what happened. Of course, this is an ongoing saga over the past several weeks, but finally, just today, Quest gave to MCI its best and final bid, it said, in its attempt to acquire MCI, offering $9.7 billion in cash and stock, which is actually $2 billion above the rival offer from Verizon.
You think they're going to take it, Bob?
Oh, absolutely not. Well, you know, I mean, the Verizon board's already backed the MCI board's already backed the Verizon deal, and for Quest to have any sort of headway, it would have to engage in a very long and protracted and expensive, might I add, proxy contest in which they round up their dissident shareholders and name a dissident board and try to get them installed at the annual meeting. These things rarely are successful.
And I think, as I understand it, a lot of analysts feel that Quest just has too heavy a debt load and that its business prospects aren't good enough, that they're just really not in a position to bring off a viable business with MCI.
Interesting. Okay. So we'll see what happens, right? Are there any deadlines on this? I keep thinking this thing's over. I've even blogged about it being over, and it just doesn't ever seem to happen.
Well, I think actually MCI does have until sometime Saturday afternoon to respond to Quest's offer. I think it's either 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock.
Yes, but yeah, this thing was over before it started.
All right, with that, so since we have some closure on that deal, let's go on to Verizon TV, a little bit off our beaten path of what's typically communications and technology, to their Verizon's TV content deal with A&E and NBC Universal Cable. Actually, Verizon may be this may be more up our alley than I first imagined.
Oh, I think it's very much up our alley, especially because really this is all about the triple play that that the telcos want in bringing video as well as voice. And data, of course, out to all of their subscribers, out to their areas, you know, it's not only Verizon. You know, SBC was making noise earlier this week about this Project Lightspeed that they have, which is not as far along as Verizon's IP video project, but surely gaining the attention of cable companies and now lawmakers. There was a House panel earlier this week in which lawmakers chastised the telcos for trying to, what they consider, engage in the practice of redlining, which is rolling out their IP video services selectively to all the neighborhoods that are economically beneficial. Which, you know, what's wrong with that? They're a business. They're in business to make money, after all. Well,
yeah, I would think that that's what any business would want to do.
Well, the problem is that the cable companies have to roll out their services by law all at once and cannot, you know, choose to be selective and redline, as the lawmakers called it. And so the cable companies, you know, called telcos on it, and now there is, you know, growing debate over how much, you know, video over IP should be regulated. And the telcos obviously say, you know, please keep a hands-off approach. You know, just
what we need is more regulation. I mean, there's so much regulation, and it's just the whole IP thing has caught the government off guard in trying to regulate it and tax it and charge access fees, and on top of that, to deal with issues of things like 911 and Homeland Security. And Homeland Security has multiple areas of challenges, right? We've got Homeland Security from the standpoint of making sure that there's 911 on VoIP lines, but secondarily, you have to worry about the potential for people using VoIP technology to keep themselves from being wiretapped and things like that. Those are some major problems that we need to deal with. So,
but of course, as far as the triple play situation and the announcement you were originally bringing up about Verizon, it's got deals with developing deals with A&E Television Networks and with NBC Universal Cable, so that they're really proposing to offer the same kind of video content that you could get from Comcast or one of the other cable companies. So the cable companies, I believe, are arguing that that if they're going to offer the same kinds of services, the same kinds of content, shouldn't they also be regulated in a similar way?
Yes, and the telcos argue, well, this is not the same service because it's based on a different technology.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how that drama plays out.
Yes. So.
Okay. I found that really interesting. Bob, I know you've been dealing a lot with the saga of Wi-Fi in Philadelphia. I've written about it as well, and it seems to be getting more and more exciting. Tell me about the latest episode in the soap opera that is Philadelphia Wi-Fi.
Well, you know, this is a $10 million project, the largest of its kind in the country. And on Monday of this week, the city held a pre-proposal meeting to answer questions for any potential bidders that wanted to respond to its RFP. And anybody who wanted a piece of this $10 million contract had to attend. And the response was a standing room only crowd of enterprises ranging in size from Sprint and Lucent down to the small minority and women-owned businesses. They came all from the Silicon Valley. I met somebody from Michigan. And
oh, so you were there?
Yes, I was there. It was a, you know, very informative session led by the City of Philadelphia's CIO, Diana Neff, who was kind enough to sit down with me for a article that will be in the coming issue of Internet Telephony Magazine.
That'll be exciting to see.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. And where is that located online? Internet Telephony Magazine. How can people find out about that? That's
itmag.com? That's itmag.com.
Okay, fantastic. Yep. You know, I talked, I think, our first podcast a few weeks back about how my recent trip to Silicon Valley, it seemed like the void market was on fire, but there seemed to be some weakness in the enterprise space, and if I was smart enough to short of IS stock, maybe I would have made some money, but did Avaya come out with some negative news? Is that what?
Avaya did, but you shouldn't look at this as the trend for the entire industry. Yes, they are the largest, you know, participant in the enterprise VoIP space, but a lot of the problems that they're experiencing right now are very company specific. They announced an acquisition of a German company called Tenovus, and on a conference call earlier this week, the CEO and the CFO admitted that they're having trouble swallowing that acquisition and integrating it fully into their operations.
I don't know too much about that acquisition.
It's a German company that they were interested in extending their reach internationally. Two-thirds of their client base right now is U.S., and most of their growth is seen from outside of the U.S. They obviously had a little stumbling in the integration of this acquisition, but again, I think that the fear that the VoIP market is slowing is just a misnomer.
It's also getting more competitive. I mean, if there was one thing I'm seeing is on the low end anyway, that they're getting more and more competitors, and I'm meeting with companies literally on a daily basis that are trying to compete with Avaya on the low end by offering devices that are a combination PBX firewall or combination IP-PBX firewall that understands VoIP, because, you know, firewalls sometimes have problems with VoIP. They also support SIP, and they can actually support up to 50 or 60 individual users, and they would be sold to service providers who would resell them to their customers. So what's happening is that Avaya is going to have to compete with a whole new breed of company, and that is the service providers that are going to be selling hosted services.
And they are experiencing a lot of the pricing pressure, in fact. That's what they admitted on the conference call.
Yeah.
And it's coming from the global services side of the business, not the communication solutions side of the business. And as a matter of fact, 70% of their maintenance contracts were up for renewal in the December and January in the December and March quarters. Now that said, they have gotten that out of the way. They have sped up the integration of Tenovus, and the stock is undervalued at $8. I mean, it's
so, all right.
Yeah, I'm not the only one that thinks so.
Leave that topic for our next financial podcast, which will one day start on TMCNet.com. Everyone check TMCNet.com out for that. Just because we've got so much to cover this week, let's move on to the next interesting announcement of the week, and that is Intel's new WiMAX chip. Who's got the scoop on that?
Oh, yeah, I did have some information about that. Intel introduced their new WiMAX chip, commercial launch of a wireless broadband chip. And they also announced that several equipment vendors and service providers are holding trials using the technology. They're calling it the Intel Pro Wireless 5116 chip that was originally codenamed Rosedale. And it's based on the WiMAX specification, IEEE 802.16-2004 spec designed to allow wireless broadband services.
Interesting. Okay. Is there any announcement as to the availability, when we're going to really see this thing in volume?
Well, I think that they're hoping that to complete testing, they're having to do interoperability testing and that kind of thing, which I believe they're planning to do into around July of this year, and expecting to ship some products by around November or December. But right. I think we'll have to just watch it and see how that goes.
Fantastic. Another big announcement, and we're gonna have to wrap up soon because I want to keep this podcast small enough to fit on iPods. is the Time Warner Comcast acquisition of Adelphia. A lot of news on that this week. Who wants to tackle that?
Oh, I can take care of that. It looks like the bankruptcy court accepted the Time Warner and Comcast combined offer, which really shuts out Cablevision and what they've been trying to do to build up their Optimum Online and Optimum Voice services. It's pretty much an even split of the Adelphia assets, and Comcast will still, at the end of the day, have the largest cable operator footprint in the U.S. with Time Warner second.
Yeah, and I think what it does is it takes Adelphia has maybe about 5 million basic subscribers, and those are going to kind of get split up between Time Warner and Comcast.
Fantastic. Just to wrap up, I actually did another tour this week. I was in Massachusetts visiting a lot of VoIP companies. I think I visited about 12 VoIP companies. And I also spoke at a show, at the American Teleservices Association show. I spoke to them about the future of contact center technology on Monday. That was down in D.C. I've been doing a lot of traveling. And I can tell you firsthand now, after going to Boston downtown, that place is such a mess from a traffic perspective. Four out of five roads are closed. They're one way in the wrong direction. If you try to follow airport signs from many areas in the city, you actually can see three or four conflicting signs pointing you to the airport in different directions. I mean, and we actually at some point flagged down a construction worker in the middle of the night and asked him for directions, and we said, you know, by the way, are the airport signs all wrong? And he turned to us and he said, probably. So I mean, it's almost a joke to try to follow any signs in downtown Boston. I mean, it's really difficult. I'm trying to figure out why there isn't some kind of blog for Boston traffic. I asked some of the locals. Nobody seems to know of one, and I bet I'd make a fortune selling advertising on such a blog. But yeah, it would take a lot of work. So.
Yeah, no, I spent a lot of time trying to puzzle my way around Boston, and one thing I find is that you can see right on the map where you want to go, and you can even see physically where you want to go. You can see the building over there, but you just can't get there. If you go towards it, you're going to hit a one-way street that'll take you the wrong way, and you're going to end up usually on Boylston Street one way or another.
Absolutely. No question about it. So for those of you out in Boston, good luck with your traveling. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We appreciate it. And for more information, go to tmcnet.com on communications and technology. And if you want any insight on my blog, it's tarani.com. We've also got Al Breedenberg, who's speaking. He's got a blog, and Bob writes for tmcnet.com. Check out the site for more information, and have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, and goodbye.
Bye for now.